the guy who drives it through.
Hit the high notes on the park. That's when we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, FB kick! The super sub has done it again! And Motherwell are back in front!
It's not a choice anymore. You know, we're going to have to be much more effective in the transfer market, and everybody in the club knows that now.
Ljubicic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Ljubicic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lucas Ljubicic!
Thick or thin, no matter what happens, we're privileged to be part of this club.
And here they come again, Rangers stretched, it's Ahmed again, Kuzmic committing himself, and he scores! It's 3-0 to Motherwell!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I dreamed of.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Hello and welcome to the first of our summer series of By The Men MFC Summer Specials. Today, Jay, Buster and myself are delighted to welcome along former Motherwell defender Rob McKinnon. Rob, thank you very much for agreeing to do this.
No problems, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Well, we'll just get torn right into it then. And after a very successful time with Hartlepool, where you made a great number of appearances for that club, you joined Motherwell in 1992. You were coming into a team there on the back of winning the Scottish Cup, but things weren't great initially, were they? The team kind of struggled to replicate that the season afterwards.
Yeah, I think I was brought in the kind of just after the new year, 1992 in January. Tommy McLean had obviously seen something in me and sent a number of scouts to watch me, and I was privileged enough to get the move and to join the club, and it was a kind of tough time. We were sitting in the lower reaches of the league, I think, and really it was quite a tough kind of baptism, if you like, moving up to the top division in Scotland, coming from obviously the bottom in England, and it was quite a hard time to adjust. But I was luckily enough we had some good talent at the club, and we managed to kind of pull away after I joined, and really I think by the end of the season we were fairly comfortable. But yeah, it was tough times at the start, and a lot of pressure games and stuff, and really I remember my debut being against Celtic at Fir Park, which you just couldn't have, you know, playing for Hartlepool against clubs, and no disrespect, you know, to the lower reaches of England, but this was just another ball game, and it was a fantastic kind of opening game, and also a big, big step up, which gladly for me, I was able to make.
Was it an intimidating process coming into the Fir Park dressing room, given there was many big figures there, prolific figures? It would have maybe been, again, you touched on it there, the step up from Hartlepool, the difference in personnel. Was that quite a jump as well? A lot of characters in the team at that time.
Yeah, it was massive. As I say, we were. I'm coming from a club that struggled every single year in England to a club which, you know, a massive club in Scotland, great tradition. Walking into the dressing room, you've got Tommy McLean and Tam Forsyth as coaches. You've got Davy Cooper. You've got Bobby Russells, John Philibin, Stevie Cutts, all these guys. It really was quite intimidating that, you know, these guys have all played with big, big clubs as well, you know, dropping down for Rangers and things like that. And, you know, to be involved with the dressing room was an absolute honour. You know, guys like Davy Cooper helped me settle in as much as, you know, they would pull your leg on several occasions, but you know, without kind of Cooper's help, especially when I went to the club, I wouldn't have probably been the player that I was. So I was really privileged to have spent some time with Davy Cooper and learned a lot from him, as well as the other guys as well, to be honest.
Rob, There's a lot of players your age who seem to have started in England. I'm a bit young, to be honest with you, to remember it, but was there a process where English teams were coming up here and picking up, you know, young boys?
I think a lot of the, back when I was kind of certainly a kid, there was a kind of gravy train going down to England with a kind of good Scottish talent, and, you know, I was luckily enough to you know, I finished playing youth football with my dad as my manager, and I went to play with Rutherglen Glencairn junior side, and at the time I just happened to fill in at left back. I was always, believe it or not, a wee skinny left winger in my youth days, but I've filled out a wee bit since then, right enough, but however, I was asked to fill in at left back because the left back had work commitments, and that happened to be the day that Jack McCartney, who was a Newcastle scout at the time, was at one of my games, and I happened to play particularly well, and that kind of set the ball rolling for me anyway to go down to Newcastle. I had a week's trial, and Jack Charlton then was happy enough with what he'd seen and offered me a contract. So there was a lot of Scottish players kind of kicking about the English scene back then, and I don't know if that has changed that much. You know, you still see guys popping up in the English leagues that are, you know, Scottish backgrounds. So for me, it was maybe a longer process. I was never picked for, you know, Scotland youth level or anything like that. I just had to learn my trade. My dad was my manager, playing a local East Kilbride team, and really that was, you know, that was it. I didn't really want to leave because I enjoyed my dad as my kind of manager, and although I was always the first one to get subbed every week, but that's by the by. That's my gripe with my old man, but however, it never done me any harm, and, you know, there's people like him and the kind of the grassroots level of football that I think we tend to overlook a lot of the times, and, you know, had it not been for these kind of guys to help develop young kids, then we would really have been struggling. So, no, but I think there's still potential, there's still talent up here. It's just, it's how it's nurtured and brought through that seems to be the problem. A big, big difference I felt when I left Motherwell and went to Holland was the way these guys lived. And it was just totally different to the kind of Scottish football mentality, and it really learnt me quite a lot, just how these guys, you know, my first night out in Holland was, you know, boys' night out. You're thinking, right, okay, it's a case of how many you can sink in one night. It was typical Scottish players' night out, but, you know, these guys were all getting up after two or three half pints of lager and going home, and you're thinking, right, okay, when's the party actually starting here? But it was just the way they lived, and you know, they were. I've never been fitter in my whole career was when I was over in Holland, and it wasn't because we got the legs run off, as it was down to the way we lived, and it really was an eye-opener. So I think trying to get coaches over here to get guys at a younger age and get them out of the kind of party mentality in Scotland, and you know, as a kind of cultural thing, and we need to try and get away from that and get our kids growing up thinking that alcohol and all the rest of it are, you know, they're kind of leave that to the side and try and concentrate on whatever it is, whether it be sport or education. But it was an eye-opener for me, and it was one I'm really glad I made.
You touched on there the move to Motherwell was a kind of a different ball game, but you had started your career at Newcastle, and something else I didn't know until I was reading up yesterday was you also did a loan spell at Man United in 1990. How massive clubs, massive clubs, but how was that, even just being in and around these places?
Well, it was phenomenal. They'd just come off an FA Cup win, the bit Crystal Palace and the famous replay when Jim Leighton was infamously dropped by Alex Ferguson, and so with an end of season tour, it was over to Frankfurt, I believe, and I had to sign on loan for a month to get involved in this, and I had been. There was obviously a few clubs sniffing about. Hartlepool had just been promoted, and I'd been on a trial at Leeds United as well with Howard Wilkinson, and Alex Ferguson asked to take me on an end of season doesn't trip to Frankfurt, and it was amazing. You know, guys like Lee Sharp and Matt Robbins, you know, for the younger audience listening, they maybe don't know these guys, but they were household names at the time. And mixing with these guys, that was quite an eye-opener. And, you know, the Ferguson hairdryer treatment was... We got beat in the semi-final against, well, I can't remember who it was, an Italian side. I think it was Milan, AC Milan, in the semi-final. And a couple of the younger guys who had broke through the first team had went out the night before, had broke a curfew, and quite literally got the hairdryer treatment after the game with Fergie. And it was, you know, a young guy like myself who was trying to impress, I was just literally pinned to the wall, kind of, in fear, just hoping that he didn't pick on me, which I was a good boy that night. I didn't break the curfew, so I had too much at stake to try and, you know, impress the manager. And I did well. Fergie said to me that he would get me back at the pre-season again, and for whatever reason, it just didn't happen. And really, that was the end of my loan spell at Manchester United, but it was a fantastic experience. And you can still, you know, I've still got the itinerary somewhere in my collection of memorabilia, and it's one I always look back on and think, well, if only, you know, but it wasn't to be, so I don't really regret it. So you just have to move on.
You obviously said earlier that you joined Motherwell after New Year in 1992, and obviously I think that was the season that we finished ninth. Obviously the following season, we would go on to, you know, third and second place finishes. As obviously being in and around the squad, what was it that, you know, made that jump? What was the difference that took us to, you know, the other end of the table?
I just think that Tommy McLean started building a team. He was given a wee bit of cash, I think. You know, not phenomenal amounts, but when you've got, you know, you start bringing guys in like Tommy Coyne back up the road for Tranmere and places like that, who was a phenomenal player. You've got Lambert, Davis, Dolan, Chris McCart, Brian Martin, Big Softy. I mean, it was a team that was built to, I don't know, I mean, on a limited budget, I suppose, compared to the bigger teams, but it was a team that was built very carefully by Tommy McLean, and he, you know, he seemed to bring the best out of players and identified where best to play people and how to get the best out of people, you know, and it just seemed to, and it wasn't, you know, a lot of people think that they ruled by fear, but it wasn't that at all. I've always found Tommy McLean to be a fantastic manager, a great person. He certainly had his moments where he would rant and rave, but, you know, I think when he's seen things that weren't going his way, he would let you know about it, and if you weren't doing your job, he had every right to let you know that, and that's what he done. And I just think the team gelled, and we just went kind of from strength to strength. I think the momentum we got for finishing third in the league really spurred us on, and then we finished second, and it was just, you know, Rangers were going through their kind of nine in a row spell, and I think Celtic were miles behind them, and probably the rest of us were miles behind them as well financially, but from a kind of football perspective, we ran them fairly close. And obviously the, you know, the strength and depth that they had and the finances they had, they were probably always going to run out winners, but that particular season when we ran them fairly close was a great season. And, you know, these kind of things, they just breed confidence, and it was a case of putting together jigsaws that Tommy McLean was, you know, each player just fitted into that jigsaw, and they got the best out of a hard-working and talented bunch of guys. So it really was a confidence thing, to be honest.
The 93-94 season also brought you your first Scotland cap against Malta. Looking at your record, three caps and not one game did Scotland concede a goal, so that's something that very few players could boast about, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I remind my son of that every time he slags me about something. So he's a member of the Scotland Tartan Army. He goes with my dad to the Scotland games, and you know, we sit and talk about my career and stuff, and he doesn't remember a lot of it, obviously being younger. But I just think that it was a privilege, it was an absolute honour. I was to be picked as being the kind of best left back in the country was just something that people can't take away from me. As you say, no goals conceded. You can argue that the opposition wasn't the strongest, but we've also played a lot of weak teams over the years with Scotland and kind of struggled against them. So I was delighted. It was something. It was a kind of bonus, and you know, to get recognition. Obviously, playing for Motherwell at the time, it was good for the club. I think we had four or five guys in between the full squad and the under-21 squad. There was times I think we had 5-6 guys with Wee Mowgli, Paul McGrillan and Wee Alec Burns and people like that getting involved, Phil Adorno and the 21s at the time coming through, and it was fantastic recognition for the club as well, which again just shows the quality that we had at the time.
You
mentioned obviously there was quite a few of you involved. Looking back, I often feel guys like yourself and Brian Martin were hard done by. You know, in my opinion, you should have earned a lot more caps. Obviously, you know, you said it was a pleasure and a privilege to be there. Do you not feel as if you should maybe have been a bit more involved?
I think there's a few squads I had to pull out. Unfortunately, through injury, there was one. My very first cap was supposed to be against Italy over in the Olympic Stadium in Rome, which we could beat 2-1, but I had to pull out the squad because the Saturday previous we were playing Hibs at Fir Park, and I overstretched for a tackle and probably had a, maybe modern day footballers in this day and age would probably say, well, put my hand up, I'm better coming off, but I stayed on the park. I ended up, I think another 15 minutes of the game was left, and I probably didn't do any favours, but I just wanted to play football. It was more honesty rather than being silly, and I hated missing football games. You know, through my career, early days anyway, I was more or less an ever present, so I was very lucky to have avoided injury and stuff. But it was an unfortunate one that I missed. Other times when you felt that you were playing well, you didn't get included in squads. So it's not a regret. I would have loved to have got more caps, but I don't regret, you know, the kind of career that I had, and to actually say I played for my country, you can't beat that. So from that point of view, people have all the medals in the world, but I've got 3 fantastic caps, and you know, I got picked for some of the B internationals, which were a great experience as well. So now there's a bit of kind of, as I said, not regret, but just I kind of wish that you had more caps to show for what was a really good spell at Motherwell, and probably between Motherwell and FC 20 was the best football I played in my career. So to not get recognised maybe a little bit more is a bit, feel a bit sad, but however, you know, you certainly don't regret these things.
See, I was looking at the team for the Japan game in 95, and you were actually playing in the defence alongside a fellow Motherwell player in Brian Martin. It seems like these days are long gone, that you would get one, never mind two, Motherwell players in the squad. Was there a feeling at that time that there was opportunities for players out with Rangers and Celtic, and now I suppose it's mainly made up of players playing the football down south?
Yeah, I think there's definitely talent just now as there was back then that probably could maybe get their way into some friendly games. You know, we've just witnessed a game against Qatar, and as you say, it seems to be guys of, you know, playing their trade down south or playing at the big clubs in Scotland. There is opportunities for young guys. There was back, you know, in our Motherwell day, I think that team included the game you're talking about in Japan. I think Lambert started that game as well, and then was substituted infamously. And, you know, having spoke to Paul after that game, he was none too happy. And I think he was considering ratting it, to be perfectly honest with you. But you look at these things and you know, he ends up going on to make however many caps. So I think at that time, we had a great squad, and we were, I think because we were challenging the Old Firm at the time, certainly finishing above Celtic and taking Rangers close, I think that brings recognition. If you're going to kind of split the old firm in the league, then to be honest, I think you're doing something right anyway, and you must have a decent squad, and that certainly reflected in the amount of bodies that we had going in away in the trips as well. And if you remember as well, Tommy Coyne with the Republic of Ireland as well. So, you know, it's certainly it was certainly full of players that deserved a bit of recognition and for the club as well. And, you know, to have five or six players away at the one time, I think, although just now the squad they have, I don't very rarely see that happening unless they get some fresh talent in.
You talked to me with great respect for Tommy McLean. He eventually would depart the club, and in came Alex McLeish. Not the most popular figure looking back on it amongst Motherwell supporters. I don't think he still is now, to be honest. But how was the transition with Alex McLeish coming in? And it obviously took the club to second place in his first season. Did you see him as a manager with great potential?
I did, yes. I thought at the time he was very approachable. Different again, totally different to Tommy McLean and his kind of managerial ways. Just obviously coming out of a very successful playing career with Aberdeen, he took the kind of, he was still classed as a player coach with Motherwell when he took over, or a player manager. And, you know, to start with, everything was fine. He was very approachable. He was kind of one of the guys, if you like, and liked to joke and stuff. And it was, you know, from a player's perspective, it was quite refreshing. You know, you had something different for Tommy. But again, I would never criticise Tommy McLean because he was fantastic at what he'd done. But it's just different styles. And Alex McLeish was exactly, you know, had his own style and wanted to impress or put that stamp on the club. We did finish second. A lot of people say, well, you know, it was just we came in there with the players that Tommy McLean had, and that's why we finished second. But, you know, I can see why certain fans maybe thought after that season we started to kind of nosedive slightly. And I think a lot of that, from the fans' perspective, was the kind of quality of the players that were getting brought in, and they weren't too happy with one or two signings. And really, you know, you could probably say that some of the signings were questionable, but again, people like Mitchell van der Gag, you know, I think that one of Alex's signings was with Mitch, and he was a fantastic player. So, guys, you know, he had an eye for talent as well. You know, Alex McLeish has been a really good manager. He's had a great career managing some big clubs, and really, I'd like to think that starting off at Motherwell, it's certainly maybe gave him a few. He probably looks back at Murrow and he'll realise that, you know, he was a bit naive with certain things and he made certain mistakes, but that's how good managers become great managers. And, you know, I wouldn't class him as the greatest manager of all time, but he certainly was a very good manager and one I've got a lot of respect for.
He got a fair baptism of fire in the sense that he was taking the team into play in Europe. Some fantastic ties and amongst that, and particularly in the first season when we got to pit our wits against Borussia Dortmund, how good an experience was that for you? And from speaking to Brian Martin previously, it's a game, especially the first leg, a game that there's a few regrets amongst former Motherwell players that maybe didn't take their chances and become real giant killers and legends of European football, I suppose.
Yeah, I think obviously that game's the one game that a Motherwell generation of fans probably talk about, is the trip over there. And from a personal point of view, it was one of the main highlights of my career, stepping out in the Westfalen Stadium, and you've got, it seemed like it must have been about 10,000 Motherwell fans behind that goal and the main stand as well, and it was just wee pockets of claret and amber everywhere all over the stadium. It was just fantastic. It was something that sticks with you. You know, I'm sure every one of us that took part in that game, we sit and put on the old DVD and have a look at it from time to time and just kind of look at the as you say, the missed chances that we had, because we really did have some glorious chances to make a name for the club. But you know, they were a quality side. We were pinned back for a lot of the game, but there was opportunities to play, and you know, it was just a different style of football that we had to adapt to that night. And I felt we did that. We ran them very, very close. Whether it be that they thought they were going to just turn up for a stroll that night and put four or five past us and the tie was dead. But, you know, to walk away a 1-0 defeat, really having them on the back foot for some good periods of time during that game, it was something that I think we should all be proud of. Probably gutted that we didn't manage to score one of those chances, and really that would have put the cat in amongst the pigeons. But as I say, when the return leg back at Fir Park, as a tie, it was finished when the wee man got sent off, and you know, we were then really struggling. And you know, you look at it and you see these tackles, and you think, you know, this is a, you know, German football. They were prone to rolling about a wee bit, and I don't think it's quite as bad so now in German football, but the European style of football, as soon as you're touched, you're down, and you know, it was a hard tackle, but at the end of the day, never a straight red, and really, I just felt that was a tie there, and then it was finished, because they took control and obviously ran out 2-0 winners, I think, on the day. So but they were a great side, full of talent. I mean, you look at some of the players, Andy Millers and guys like that, and it was just phenomenal experience to pit your wits against guys like that. And really, I think games like that just gave us confidence. It gave us a belief that we wanted more. And it's always the same, you know, like say a Scotland cap, you want more. You know, winning the Champions League with these guys in Barcelona, they just want more. They want to do it again and again and again. And it was the same with us. We were at a level that we were playing against Europe's top side and really matching them for spells of that game. And we wanted more of it. And we took that back to domestic football. As you say, we finished second with Alec McLeish. And really, we gave the old firm a run for their money for once.
After the second spell in Europe in the MyPath 47 game, it was such a long spell where Motherwell didn't feature in European competitions. Then recent times we've featured a lot, and it was kind of four or five seasons in the trot there. How big a thing is it playing with a club like Motherwell and getting the chance to pit your wits against European opposition of any sort?
That's obviously, it's massive. I just think in recent years the clubs that have qualified from Scotland have really struggled, and whether that, I just, it's very difficult to put your finger on it, but you're coming up against opposition that you're maybe not familiar with abroad, and thinking, oh well, you know, we've been drawn against a Finnish side, or you know, like say the MyPA 47, as you mentioned. We thought, never heard of them before, should be an absolute doddle, and lo and behold, you know, you struggle. And I think it's kind of endemic in the Scottish way of thinking that we're world beaters, and we're getting drawn against teams from Slovenia and places like that. You think, oh, that'll be an absolute doddle, and we're losing to these teams. And I don't think it's down to their leagues, domestic leagues, being stronger. I don't know if it's a mentality thing, but we have struggled to kind of compete in Europe, even the, you know, the old firm of late, and Champions League football and Europa League, we just struggle. And I just don't think we're where we should be at all levels of football in Scotland, and it's showing us up when we're getting into Europe and playing against some mediocre sides in Europe. Let's be honest, they're not household names, and we still seem to be losing. So when we get the odd bit of success, it should really kind of filter through, but it just doesn't seem to be doing that, and we seem to struggle season after season. So it's great getting the European football, but it just seems to be all too brief when we eventually get there and kind of lose in the first round, which has happened to obviously Millwall in the past for ourselves.
The 95-96 season was a great deal more disappointing than the previous two, finishing eighth. And then you were to make your move to Holland to FC 20. Not a thing that the modern day footballer does very much, moving from Scotland to head abroad. You look at kind of guys like Ryan Gold just now, and he was almost, he was praised to the hilt for having the ambition to move. Yourself and Paul Lambert both departed Motherwell and headed abroad. How much of a culture shock was that for you? You touched on the lifestyle thing earlier on. Was that, did it feel like a risk at the time? Was it?
I think it was a massive risk. I mean, Holland is a totally different culture, albeit the vast majority of the people are fluent in English, which certainly helped initially. But, you know, to go over there, when I had a kind of move to Aberdeen that was more or less signed and sealed until the Dutch club came in, it was something that I just wanted. And I want to say, I spoke to a lot of fans, Motherwell fans, and, you know, we weren't looking for, you know, it's not like modern day guys go in with their agents and they're demanding X amount of pounds and they're wanting, you know, all sorts of tag-ons and, you know, your rights for your shops and all that stuff. We just wanted a little bit more. I just felt, you know, the club just didn't really want to go that little bit more. I don't know whether they had a bit of ambition to stay or to have another go at getting back up the table or not, but other contracts were out. There was a few of us, Paul Lambert, as you say, was one of them, and really the offers that were made, you know, weren't fantastic, but at the same time, you know, we were playing at a kind of, I hate saying it, but, you know, Motherwell classed as second rate in comparison to your Old Firm, but, you know, out with the Old Firm, we were on a par with every other club in Scotland, and we could mix it with the best. But, you know, financially, we knew that they didn't have the clout that maybe like St Aberdeen had, or Dundee United and people like that, because you hear who's getting paid what, and obviously at Motherwell, we weren't on the best of terms, but, you know, we just wanted a little bit better just to improve our own, like everybody else in life, you know, if you're, whatever walk of life you're doing, you want to get paid better for if you're doing a good job. So it wasn't to be. Aberdeen had shown an interest. I spoke to Roy Aitken, more or less kind of agreed things with him, but then Holland phoned us up. Agent from Holland had asked me to go over and have a chat, which I did, and I really liked the way the club was sold to me, and I had no second thoughts about turning Aberdeen down and unfortunately leaving Motherwell, which for me, you know, I do realise that it was Tommy McLean and the club that gave me my chance to perform at a good level in a top league in Britain, and I did that, but, you know, at the same time I felt that I had played well enough to justify getting a better contract. It wasn't to be, so we had to obviously part company, but the culture shock, it was a big, big move, and one that, you know, I was very glad that I took that, and, you know, we qualified for Europe in the first season over there, and the experience of playing in a different culture, different type of football, it was just great. You know, my daughter was born over there, and it's really just something I was glad that quite proud that a Scottish person could go over there and mix it in that league, because the mentality they have, you know, when you first signed, and it was like, oh, Scottish people, they just like drinking and, you know, and eat pies and, they, you know, all this kind of stuff. And Theo Tinkat was obviously played at Aberdeen, and he was one of my teammates in Holland, and he helped me settle in as well, and kind of took me under his wing, so it made it very easy to settle in. And again, when you're playing football and the team's winning, it all just seems to fit into place. You know, had I went there and I'd have struggled, you know, to settle in with the family or settle in with the football, then it could have been a kind of long 2 years, but it was fantastic and one I'm really glad I made.
Would you like to see more young Scottish players take a chance and move abroad? I think that at times players are now seeing moves to the Championship or League One in England as a step up, and for me, that's, I wouldn't really view that as the case. Would you agree with that kind of sentiment that maybe moving abroad and broadening their horizons would maybe be a benefit to their careers?
Definitely. I think maybe players look at it as being a later stage of their careers, maybe having a couple of years abroad somewhere, but I was really glad I took the chance and really happy that, you know, it really developed me as a player as well. As I, you know, said to you before, the lifestyle off the park was more professional. It was just from start to finish, it was just a far more professional experience. Young players going down to the Championship in Division 1, League 1 in England, I can see the reasons why they're doing it. Is it better, the type of football, the level of football? I don't know. I mean, a lot of people down south who I still keep in touch with all think that the Scottish Premier is probably on a par with possibly League 1 and the Championship, which when you see some of the games, you can understand why. But I think there is probably only one reason these guys are moving to the Championship and League 1, and it is financial. And you can't really criticise them too much for that, but when you see them kind of coming back, I mean, the young lad Scott Allen from Hibernian, fantastic player, went down south to West Brom, hardly kicked a ball, and he's back up at Hibs, and, you know, a good young player, but did he have to make that move? Was it a move just for finance? You just don't know, and you think sometimes the younger guys can develop better at their clubs are coming through, and, you know, their chance will come maybe a year or two further down the line. It's just developing them. And but as I say, Ryan Gold's over there, by all accounts he's doing well and settling in. I was a little bit older, so I was a wee bit more worldly wise. It maybe is a bit more of a bigger change if you're a young kid and you're maybe still living with your parents and stuff and having to go abroad, and that, I can see that being a little bit more difficult. But from my point of view, the stage of the career it happened, and I was really delighted that I did take the chance, and I can only go from my own experience. I would recommend it to anybody if they had the opportunity to do it.
Just out of interest, you'd mentioned about the lifestyle that a lot of young footballers kind of have, you know, in terms of the partying and the drinking and stuff. Do you think that plays a part in, you know, a reluctance to maybe seek to go abroad? I'm just thinking, you know, three names recently, or three, you know, promising Scottish players that have had spells abroad. You've had Gary O'Connor in Russia, Derek Riordan, I think, went to China, and then, of course, Ryan Gold. And I think, you know, obviously I don't want to kind of berate any individuals, but two of those out of three are kind of, you know, guys that are associated with, you know, partying and kind of going out, and those are the guys who didn't really... I know Gary O'Connor had a relatively successful time in Russia, but then he came back because he just couldn't settle there. Do you think that's a part of it? You know, Ryan Gold really does seem to be, you know, quite intelligent, has his head screwed on, and therefore it seems easier for him. Do you think that, you know, we need to get rid of the poor lifestyle in Scotland first before, you know, we're going to have more players with the mindset that they would actually go abroad?
Yeah, I totally agree. I just think it's something, as I said before, it's the kind of Scottish culture. It's all to do, you know, it starts at probably when preschool, you know, you're just, kids are getting maybe their own diets, they're getting whatever it is they're getting and mixing their own things, and it's just a culture thing. I really do think it's, you know, it's just too easy to, on a Saturday night, if you can't be bored cooking, let's go up the chippy. I mean, at the end of the day, it's what we're putting in our mouth. I'm maybe not wanting to be talking about diets and stuff like that. I always found it very hard to kind of keep my weight down, and it was down to just being silly and what I was putting down my neck. But at the end of the day, when I went to Holland, it totally changed, and it was, you know, I keep saying it was just down to being professional, both on and off the park, and just living, you know, it was treated as a job. That's these guys over there, it was their job. When, you know, Scottish players have a night out, it's carnage. It is, you know, it's like, it's just kind of who can drink the most, and you know, who got in the worst state, and, you know, let's have a kebab on the way home. And it's just, to me, it's getting out of that mentality. And I don't, you know, it's not just football players, this is a kind of epidemic in Scottish kind of psyche. It's just how do we change that? You know, the governments and stuff are trying to change things with school meals and all and that. It's the way to start. You know, we have to start somewhere, but it is, you know, unfortunately, you just have to look at the health kind of figures that come through with heart attacks and, you know, all that. Just, and it is just down to a kind of lifestyle thing, and it's something, you know, I can't change it. It's people with a lot more experience at these things than me having to change it, but we just have to try and, you know, if it is young kids want to concentrate in sport, you know, with a massive lift with the Commonwealth Games and stuff, and, you know, hopefully that filters through, because all these young kids that had success, I'm sure they're making, especially the swimmers, you know, these guys are up at 5 a.m, they're making sacrifices, and that's something, if you want to achieve the best, and whatever you do, you have to make sacrifice, and in sport, a lot of it is down to the diet and how you live, kind of, away from whatever sport it is you're doing. So, I don't know, guys, if you've any ideas, let's change the diets and all the rest of it in Scotland, but unfortunately, it seems to be a culture thing, and maybe take a bit of time to get out of that.
Now, you're a 1,000,000% right there. It's not even just football players, as you say, you know. I mean, you know, I've often thought about me and my own friends, and as you say, you know, everything revolves about going to the pub, basically. What are you doing at the weekend? Don't know, we'll meet in the pub and see what happens, you know. So it's definitely a culture thing rather than a, you know, just obviously just amongst footballers. But as you say, it's one of the things I don't see it changing, to be honest with you.
No. I have to be a better man than me to change it, I'm afraid, but it's how you do it, and I think little by little we need to try and make a bit of change. But as you say, then, you know, meeting in the pub, it's you know, but I still went out in Holland with guys and met them in bars and pubs, and but they would stop at like kind of a couple of half pints and go home, you know, whereas most of the people in Scotland, they get into the pubs, it is sociable, but it then just becomes antisociable, because after that it's, you've got drunks filtering out into the town, and it's just, it's carnage. But you know, it also makes us, our tag of being a friendly nation, and we are, and you know, it's how, you know, it's a tipping scale, and you just, how much do we take to before we stop and say, right, we need to change this and try and, you know, live healthier lives. But you know, I could go on and on about it, but something has to change, and I'm unfortunately not in a great shape myself just now, so I won't be the one that's changing it.
We need Jamie Oliver. Bring in Jamie Oliver, he's the man.
That's true, yeah.
Well, moving up to date, you obviously came back in a brief spell at Hartlepool, then Hearts, then to Clyde Bank, and kind of wound down from there. We'll bring it up to date with the current team, given that it's the week anniversary of us hammering Rangers for the second time in 4 days. We're not going to talk about that too much. Have you managed to see much of Motherwell in the last season? And if so, what were your thoughts?
I've caught games on TV, obviously, when I've been live on telly. I thought they've struggled. I thought some great moves, kind of January window bringing, well, prior to that as well, with some players, but you've got McManus, McDonald, you've got Stevie Armo, you've got Lasley, you've got Pearson. I mean, that really should be the nucleus of a very strong team. And I think when the chips were down, looking at the two playoff games, that was the difference. You know, there was a, you could see the quality that was there within the side. Ainsworth with his pace, I mean, he's got pace to burn, that guy, but, you know, sometimes just the finished article, the final pass, it just let them down. But, you know, there is a nucleus of a good side there, and it's really, they've struggled in the kind of, I wouldn't call it lesser games, but the games that probably mattered more than the playoff games against teams like the Hamilton Accies, and you know, not wanting to go too much to getting gubbed with them. But at the end of the day, there was games where we really should have competed a lot better, but we didn't, and that's why they were in the position they were in at the end of the season. But I think, you know, as I said before, looking at it, it was a very comfortable victory in the two playoff games, and one that you just seen a wee bit of class from Motherwell, and they weathered a bit of storm at Ibrox, came through that, and really could have won a lot more comfortably had they taken some other chances. But the home game as well, you know, they just had a better squad, and that showed through to me why they couldn't have produced that before, you know, the playoff games, and to get themselves out of trouble. I don't know, it's just, I think a lot of it is confidence as well, and really down to guys' attitude and application. And as I say, maybe a touch unlucky with certain players being injured through the season, but you know, most clubs have to cope with that as well. So hard to put your finger on it. It's just they were where they were because they weren't quite good enough over the course of the season. But thankfully, as I say, the two games they managed to shine through and really deservedly stay in the league.
Having been at Motherwell while they've been enjoying success, and then also while they've been fighting it out at the bottom of the league, do you feel that it's something that the supporters are quite used to and they're able to deal with it? I found it particularly difficult this season, despite having seen Motherwell finish bottom and not be relegated, narrowly avoid playoffs. But do you think that as soon as fans get a wee bit of a taste for success, expectation levels can sometimes be a bit of a hindrance to the club?
Absolutely. I think you just need to look at when, you know, Motherwell were splashing the cash and getting people like wee Spenny and Gorham and guys like that on massive, massive wages, and then, you know, they were kind of big names coming to the club, getting paid a fortune to play for Motherwell, and, you know, John Boyle was trying to have a go at really getting the club back up to where they hopefully belonged. But, you know, and I think that kind of brings a bit of expectation that the club should be at a different level, but it doesn't always work like that. You know, sometimes teams are built on shoestring budgets and can perform and gel, and really sometimes when you're bringing big names to the club, they don't really gel, or they, you know, they think they're a step above all the other players, and there's a wee bit of animosity can sometimes creep in with, you know, players that think, that find out that somebody's on double the wages and all that. It's just, you know, football players' mentality, and some of them kind of take the huff and that kind of thing. But I think the Motherwell fans have been used to the good days, and have obviously some bad days. Thankfully, we've kept our league status, and hopefully give the manager certainly the benefit of the doubt and let him hopefully build some good quality in, and try and use his contacts and get a decent bunch of guys. We've got obviously some players coming to the latter stage of their career, which, you know, if they're being honest, they've maybe only got another season or so to go, so they need to look at a bit of fresh talent and try and get some guys in there. And if that's on a shoestring budget, then the manager has to earn his money and get these guys performing. If he doesn't, then obviously they're going to fail, but hopefully, as I say, maybe two or three good players into that squad and really start the season as they mean to go on. I just think if you get a bit of momentum at the start of the season, it carries you on. I mean, Hamilton Accies were tipped by everybody to go down. They started the season great. They were up the top of the league at one point, and then they had a bad spell. And you're always going to have a spell in the season where, you know, you're going to drop points. And Accies started dropping points, but they had the kind of the cushion or the buffer that they've already got those points at the start of the season. And it's amazing, you know, it's just, you can have a wee spell where you've maybe lost two or three games, but you're still sitting relatively comfortable on the table. Motherwell didn't have that luxury and have struggled all season, and, you know, to get off to a flyer at the start of the season is really, really important for, you know, a number of reasons. That if you can keep it going and keep the momentum going, you can finish in Europe. If, as I say, you get some injuries and a bit of loss of form, you've still got the buffer of sitting fairly healthy on the table.
That's absolutely fantastic. I really, really appreciate you coming on today and telling some very, very interesting stories. I hope that the fans enjoy it as much as ourselves have over the course of the last 45 minutes or so.
That's been great.
Buster J, thanks very much, guys, as always.
No worries, cheers.
No bother, and thanks very much to Rob as well for coming on.
Bye.
Next up for us is Seb Dykstra, one that quite a lot of people have been already getting in touch about. That's what we're looking forward to. You've been listening to the By The Mint MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.